And so one of the things that I have done, which I am very proud of, is that we now have a federal law to increase the retirement age from 65 to 70, so that there's no reason why people can't be working until that time. And also, very importantly, that we should be able to draw Social Security and still work for a living, and that there should be no limitations upon what you can earn. It's much better to keep you working and earning to whatever extent you can, rather than to limit you. Now that is only true when you're 72 years of age. And as we possibly can, we need to reduce the time within which you have the option to draw Social Security. I'm deeply involved in the whole retirement policy because I'm also the author of something called ERISA, which is the Employees Retirement Security Act. Under ERISA, which is now the law and has been for the last 5 years, the private pension plans of 30 million Americans are insured. A private pension plan is a pension which you draw from an employer. It has nothing to do with Social Security. As a matter of fact, the law prohibits Social Security to be deducted from a private pension plan annuity which you receive. And most of the highly organized industries have private pension plans. Now, in Social Security, which covers 115 million, and private pension plans which cover 30 million, there is, as you see, a great difference of 85 million people. The problem we have with Social Security is that it's inadequate to present costs of living and the present ability to live comfortably. And therefore, more and more, we need to build up private pensions in order to be sure that older people have enough to live on. That's the most important single thing we have to do. Now, the increasing of Social Security itself must be done, of course, in accordance with the cost of living. And we should adjust Social Security accordingly twice a year, as is done, for example, for retirees in the federal government. But in addition to that, we must remember that Social Security taxes are today very high for the young worker, and that therefore, as the young worker often has to wait 25, 30, or 35 years before he can realize on Social Security, we don't want him to rebel against Social Security and try to have something repealed in respect of it. And the way to handle that, of course, is to concentrate all we can on private pension plans. And in addition, under private pension plans, it is necessary to give people an opportunity to get something out of their plan if they work for as little as 5 years. Now, the present law provides that. You begin to get something out of your private pension if you've worked for 5 years, and then when you retire, you get some part of it. Now, that's totally new and has not been done before. Those are the big things. In addition to that, we've got to buck up Medicare. Medicare is quite inadequate as it stands today because it fails to include prescriptions for drugs, etc., and most older people need that. And it fails to include also eyeglasses, hearing aids, and comparable appliances, as well as dental work and so on. All of that needs urgently to be improved. Now, these are the areas that need to be worked on very diligently. In addition, if older people don't work, it's very essential that they have centers in which to find social companionship and also some work, because a good deal of handwork can be done in those centers or can be taken home. This is the subject of the Older Americans Act, which has been extremely helpful in that regard already, and what needs to be materially improved and expanded. And I have the honor to be one of the authors of the Older American Act. Now, all of these things to which I referred are contained in this policy paper, which I've issued today, and upon which I will work if returned to the Senate. I have already done a great many of the things, as I've described them to you, in this regard. But this is a continuous process, because we're dealing with very large sums of money in the federal government, though I might tell you that the federal government, especially the Congress, is very kindly disposed toward older people. And it had better be, because we expect within the next 25 or so years that the number of our older citizens over 65 will double. This is attributable to the fact that modern medicine makes life longer and will make it longer and longer still. Now, one subject which I have not adequately mentioned is housing. Housing for the elderly is now one of the special cares of our housing laws. And whole buildings are being built for our elderly citizens, especially adaptable to them, with a rather modest governmental subsidy, enough to provide adequate living space for people of low or very moderate income. I have personally, and my wonderful staff, some of whom are here, and I'm going to introduce them to you, because remember, I have almost 18 million people in this state, and it's only our staffs that extend our power so that we can really help you. And the more intelligent and the more active the staff, the more a particular public official can do for you. And so it is right to recognize these young people as active and diligent workers who are entitled to your thanks, I hope, as much as I am. Now, these are the ideas which I lay before you as both accomplishments in some regard and what can be accomplished and what must be accomplished in your interest. But I would like to end as I began and then entertain some questions. The important thing is to keep you walking. Keep you walking, not make you an invalid because you're an older person. There is no greater therapy than that. And I deeply believe in prevention. For example, I'm deeply devoted to a national health care plan for the United States, which I believe will be helpful to our older people as well as helpful to the population generally. Because the plan, as I see it, must be based upon preventive medicine. And just as it should assure you against the hazards of illness, it should even more greatly assure you that you will have periodic examination so that your health can be analyzed and you can be warned in advance of impending difficulties. Sickness care is infinitely more expensive than preventive health care, and that must be an absolutely essential ingredient in any national health plan. And so beyond everything else, I would like to leave with you two thoughts that dominate me in respect of older people. One is dignity. Dignity beyond everything else. Nobody is looking for handouts that's worth anything in life. And older people have done their job for the society, and it's now society's turn to do its job for them. And second, to keep older people active, moving, interested, working, communicating with each other and with the world in general, and thereby making them feel that they're part of life and that they're not just sitting around waiting for the Grim Reaper. Thank you all very much. Now, if there are any questions, first I said I'd introduce my staff. Here's Barbara Green. Barbara is our specialist in health and a very well-educated and extremely able young woman. And David Morse, who is concerned with everything else about the elderly, including housing and work opportunities, etc. Now, do we have some questions?
Yes.
Yes. Well, let's start at the end here with this gentleman.
Senator Chavez, I've had the honor of meeting with you before, Senator. I am 62. I have just become a senior citizen. And I resent the opposition stating that you should retire. You're still in great shape and make better money.
Thank you very much. I thank you, one of our younger elders, for those very kind words. Yes, ma'am. We'll come to you in a minute. So just a minute.
Senator, I wrote you a letter. A couple of people in here wrote you a letter about a year and a half ago concerning cutting the budget for some of our people. This is a rehabilitation center,
right,
as you probably know.
Well, it's a great idea, this Scout movement, and it brings a number of disciplines together, which go together very well.
And you were very graciously answered my letter, for which I am deeply grateful. I would like to ask you something, which I hope you won't be offended.
No, I'm never offended.
I will be 78 February. May I ask your answer?
I'm 76.
God bless you.
Certainly. Yes, you have to be right there.
I too, before I ask the question, like to thank you for always having answered my letter.
Thank you.
The question is, Social Security, up to 22,900, I think, people, that is poor people, and people of moderate income pay 6% something.
Right.
People who make $1 million pay one tiny little fraction of any of 1%. I think the poor always pay. I think it's unjust. I think that Social Security should be ad infinitum. Everybody should pay the same. That will probably reduce Social Security imposition on the poor people too, generally.
I'll repeat it. The gentleman asked the following question. Why does everybody pay the same rate of Social Security tax when they're at work in their working years, so that the maximum upon which an individual pays Social Security tax is some $22,000 plus? And what about people whose income is far in excess of that? Why don't they pay a Social Security tax on the additional amounts? And also, why don't they pay a progressive Social Security tax like the income tax? Because if your income comes up to, let us say, $100,000, you pay a lot less than 6%. You pay some fractional percentage. The reason for that is that it was believed when Social Security was passed that it would be essentially for people of modest means, and that the progressive tax should be the income tax rather than the Social Security tax. At that time, there was nothing in the Social Security system about disability. You see, that came later. And there was nothing also in the Social Security system about Medicare. That also came later. The opportunity for a progressive taxation came when disability and Medicare came along. But the Congress chose not to do it because by then income tax rates were very high and there was an unwillingness to match the income tax system with progressive rates. Now, that subject should be reconsidered. Now, it is true, and one must be fair about this, that related to income, those of modest means receive more out of Social Security than those of large means. It is also true that the income tax is steeper, and it takes 50% of earned income and 70% of interest and dividends. So people in high brackets pay a great deal of income tax. But still, in view of the fact that the Social Security system is in some trouble about its reserves, this is a fair way in which to try to improve it. In the meantime, I believe that if the Social Security system needs support, as it probably will, notwithstanding the increase next year, that support will probably come in two ways. One, by taking disability out of the system and putting it in the SSI, which can be supported more easily by general revenues or tax money, or actually making general revenues available to the Social Security system itself, and by considering progressive Social Security taxation, somewhat like we have in the income tax. So let me say, in answer to your question, I would favor these various ways in which to strengthen the Social Security system. As of this moment, you're a little ahead of your time. Yes, in the aisle.
In view of the fact that you only are allowed a $750 exemption per person on your federal income tax, don't you think that that's a very unrealistic small amount in view of the high cost of living, and therefore, in order to increase the living standards of all the citizens, are you in favor of increasing the exemption from the unrealistic $750, say, to a modest, if
you
say to
$2,000?
No,
I think $2,000 is too high. We can't afford it. We can't afford it without having much bigger deficit than we do. But I have voted and will continue to vote for $1,000. I think that is a fair increase under present circumstances.
Senator?
Yes?
I consider myself one of the first who sent you a telegram asking for you to run.
Please do.
And you answer me. Now I have three things to say and a question. First, I consider the position of Mr. D'Amato malicious. I consider the other position is Lotte Holtzman. Well, she opposes everything, but she doesn't offer anything. And we've been privileged to share the wisdom, the intelligence,
right,
Mr. Javits,
right,
also, for our entire generation. And the question is, Mr. Javits, are you running in 1986?
Well, I think it'd be fair to say if the Lord spares me, and the people elect me in 1980, I'll promise you an answer by 1984.
I'm going home now, but I want to compliment you. I like the way you spoke, and I think you're well preserved. You're able to do everything.
Thank you.
I really mean it.
Thank you all very much.
Everybody loves that
man. A question, please.
I talk French.
Can't understand you.
Before last night, I was in my bed. I watched you. You said you were 78, but you guys are 24 years. You are in I vote for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Mr. Rosario, would you like to take over again now? Or yes, the lady back there had a question. Madam, I think there is another way to handle that, if I may say so. And I am myself the author of that way. We have, by dint of real enterprise, put through a measure which will give, in round figures, let's say $1.6 billion to $2 billion every year for food aid, for fuel aid. To elderly and poor people. It's especially directed to the elderly. Last year was the first year, and it worked inadequately last year because they were caught at the last minute. They sent out many checks indiscriminately, and it was not well run. But now it's much more on track, and we're handling it very carefully. I understand.
$65 stamps, the fuel bill is being paid by the state. There's no difference where we are being paid by the subsidy.
I understand. I'm coming to something, madam, if I may.
We should all get
We will see that fuel assistance goes to multifamily structures so that you will get your benefit on the rent even if you don't get it in the stamps. It doesn't matter which way you get it.
They get it in both ways.
I know they did there.
I have a friend up in Washington Heights. She pays $43 rent. And her fuel is paid by the state.
Yeah.
And she gets $65 worth of
stamps. I have just...
It's ridiculous.
It is. It has been ridiculous.
Because
but
No, the
lady is absolutely right. She has a very valid point, except that I believe that it will now be cared for better this winter. That's what I'm pointing out. Anyone outside, come in. We thank you very much for attending this morning. And as you know, the president has a limited time. The way we'll handle this press conference is that the president will make such remarks as he chooses. And then questions are certainly in order. For the president. I will remain after the president's gone and answer such questions as you have for me. And so without further ado, and as one always does when introducing the president, and a dear and marvelous friend to me, the president of the United States, Gerald Ford.
Thank you very much, Jack. I'm delighted to be here this morning, and I thank all of you for coming. I'm proud to be here this morning because I stand here on what I consider to be honorable principle. Principle that involves a strong support for a very dear and very close friend. And principle on the basis that, in my judgment, Senator Jack Javits is the most qualified person I know in the state of New York and probably in the country to be the senator for the state of New York for the next 6 years. So I don't care what label Jack Javits is running under. I'm here because I first consider him a friend, and secondly consider him to be the most qualified person I know to be in the United States Senate from New York or elsewhere. So Jack, I don't care whether you have a R or an L in front of your designation on the ballot. I'm for you, and the voters of New York, I hope and trust, will show good judgment in supporting you on November 4th. Now, I'll be delighted to respond to any questions. You know, that's the probably shortest political speech I ever made, and probably as sincere as anyone I ever made. It reminds me of a campaign speech that Bear Bryant made on my behalf in 1976. It was the shortest campaign speech I ever heard. We were down in Mobile, Alabama after a long, long day going in a motorcade from New Orleans to Mobile. We got to Mobile about 9 o'clock in the evening. 25,000 people there. They were tired. I was dead. I got up there on the podium, and here was my old friend Bear Bryant, the coach at the University of Alabama. He and I started as assistant coaches 30 years before. He stayed in a profitable profession, and I got into politics. But anyhow, Bear was up there, and they asked him to make a speech, and he got up on the podium, and he said, "You'd only made one previous political speech," but he was here to speak up on his behalf of his friend Jerry Ford. And he said, "I'll put it this way. If I had a quarterback who took my team from his own 1 yard line and brought the ball down to the opponent's 10 yard line, I'd keep him in. I wouldn't take him out," and sat down. Well, I'm on Jack Javits' team from beginning to end, and I'm delighted to respond to any questions. Yes, sir.
I think anyone could understand the relationship you have with Senator Javits, going back to your days as a congressman, your work with the party. But given your knowledge of the inner workings of the party, has this created any kind of uncomfortable moments for you? Because D'Amato is the designated Republican out there, and he's supporting Reagan, you're supporting Reagan, the senator's supporting Reagan. Is there any awkwardness at all connected to it?
Not at all. It's the first time in my political career where I publicly supported a person who was not running on the Republican ticket. But I feel so strongly because of friendship and principle, I don't feel awkward at all under any of the circumstances that you've described. And I suspect it won't happen in the future that I'll be supporting someone other than a Republican candidate. But in this case, because of the circumstances, I feel very strongly, and I have a good, clear conscience. And if I could spend the next 10 days here on behalf of Jack Javits, I would do it with all the enthusiasm I could.
Mr. President?
Yes, ma'am.
What are your objections to Al D'Amato?
I don't think, on the basis of what I know, that he has enough experience and knowledge of the major issues that are involved in handling matters at the level of the United States Senate. He'll go down there as a person that won't be able to move in and get things done as rapidly or as well as I think Jack Javits can. A multitude of reasons. And I think to change in this situation would be bad for New York and certainly bad for the country.
How do you feel about Mr. D'Amato having raised the age and made that into the issue that apparently had more to do with Mr. Javits'
I think it was unfortunate. First place, you judge people on the basis of their capabilities, not on the basis of some number. And I've been close enough to Jack Javits over the years and today to know that he is fully qualified in every way I know to be the senator from the state of New York for the next 6 years. And for anybody to attack in a snide way, I think is very, very unfair and unfortunate.
Mr. Ford,
yes, sir.
There seems to be the general feeling, however, that today Mr. D'Amato represents more of what the Republican Party stands for philosophically, ideologically, than Senator Javits does. Did you challenge this thing?
I don't think the relatively small vote in the primary is indicative of the broad philosophical views of the Republicans in the state of New York. Oftentimes, you can get in a primary a relatively small vote that is not indicative of the views of the Republicans statewide. I think that was probably the case in this primary, just like it was in New Jersey in the primary in 1978. A relatively small percentage of the Republican voters beat Cliff Case. They nominated a person who got creamed when he ran statewide against the Democratic challenger. I still believe Cliff Case represented a broader and deeper spectrum of Republicans in New Jersey, just like I happen to believe Jack Javits does in the state of New York.